You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a CFP and an accredited estate planner as well. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is August 21st, 2013. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 14,897, the NASDAQ at 3599, and the S&P at 1642. Last week, we discussed financial education resources on the web, those to help you with money, those to help you with financial literacy and financial awareness, including mymoney.gov, irs.gov, finra.org, and investor.gov. Lots of interesting information on those websites. We've posted those to the yourfinancialchoices.com website as well if you need more information. This evening, we're discussing education planning and concepts to employ when covering college cost. I will be joined by Kevin Brogius, CPA and CFP, for that discussion. We are live, and we are here to take your questions. Each week, we do try to have a topic that gives us an opportunity to dig a little deeper, understand a little better, and make better decisions about various financial areas of our lives. Judy Ann will answer your calls this evening, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And if you are not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Judy Ann and she will bring it into the studio. We're excited about tonight's topic. It affects a lot of people. It's not just parents anymore who are helping support our children in their financial education endeavors. We get grandparents who are helping save money for their kids' college education. We have aunts, uncles, godparents, etc. So it's important for all of us to pay attention to this evening, as well as you students out there. You may find some valuable information. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Again, tonight, education planning for students, parents, grandparents, relatives, friends, anybody who wants to help support the college education cost of their loved ones. My guest this evening is Kevin Brogius. Here, he is representing the PICPA, which is the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants. I want to thank Kathleen Miller from the PICPA for introducing us to Kevin and the benefits that the PICPA is bringing to our community regarding financial awareness and promoting topics such as this. So we want to get started. Kevin is the founder and president of Wealth Management, Inc., an independent fee-only financial planning and registered investment advisory firm. He is a CFP practitioner and CPA and a personal financial specialist. He's an active member of the American Institute of CPAs, as well as the PICPA, where he serves as chairman of the Lehigh Valley Chapter's Personal Financial Planning Committee. Kevin is a registered financial advisor with the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, also known as NAPFA, as a fee-only professional. Kevin received his BS in accounting from Villanova University and an MBA from Wilkes University. He's also an adjunct professor at DeSales University, where he teaches financial management. Kevin, welcome to the show after that big, huge intro.
Thank you very much, Lori.
Thank you for being here. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. The only thing I want to add to that wonderful introduction is that I am the father of four children. One of my children has already graduated college. I have three children in college
Oh,
right
wow.
now. So And a special shout out to my wife, Joan, who's done more FAFSA forms than she probably wants to admit at this point. I do have offices for my business in Fogelsville, Plymouth Meeting, and Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Oh, wow. So several offices. So you like to get around a little bit. And obviously, you're going to be well-versed in education planning. So we're going to get started. I want to remind folks the phone number to call this evening is 610-758-8810. As we go through the show, we're going to also talk about some resources available to resources that are available to you. As I mentioned last week, talking about financial education resources, FAFSA has a website, and it's fafsa.ed.gov, and that's so that you can get some educational information there as well about applying for financial aid. But we're talking about more than just financial aid tonight. We are talking about, you know, applying for financial aid. You can get loans. Loans are available not just for people who have need. Some of the federal student loans are not just based on financial needs, so it's important for people to know that. We also want to point out to kids that college costs are more than what you might initially identify. You think tuition, but it's tuition, room and board, books, fees, supplies, equipment, computers, travel, miscellaneous expenses. So when you're trying to determine how much it's going to cost for you to go to college, you have to kind of keep a lot of these different pieces, you know, in mind when you're thinking about it. So let's talk about some general concepts around education planning tonight, and then let's give our listeners some ideas and strategies to consider and some resources they can check out, like that website, and there's some other ones I'm going to say throughout the show. Many parents suffer from sticker shock when they realize how expensive a college education is. So how important is it to start saving when your child is young rather than starting when they are in high school, Kevin?
Well, you know, I was on the collegeboard.com website before I came over, and what I saw there was the average cost for a state school for an in-state resident right now is $17,000 a year, tuition, room, and board. And for a private institution, it's $42,000. Also, college inflation is averaged about 5% for both public and private colleges. So as you can see, it becomes a major financial planning issue for a lot of folks. Now, as to starting sooner rather than later, it's really like any other goal. The sooner you start, the less you'll spend overall. For example, suppose you have a newborn child that you expect will be going to college at age 18. And let's say the college you expect he will go or she will go to costs $25,000 a year, today's dollars, about $100,000 for 4 years. At age 18, that same education would cost $200,000. That's with a 4% inflation rate. So if you started saving today and assume you earned 5% on your college investments, you would have to save about $7,000 a year for that child's education. If you waited 5 years to start saving, that cost jumps to $11,000 a year, or $147,000 in total. So by starting 5 years earlier, you'll save about $20,000 in total.
You know, Kevin, I think you made a great point, and I want to reiterate that. You said, and I don't know if people really grasp this, that the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost you. And what you're saying there is it's going to cost you more because you don't have the benefit of the earnings on your investments. When you're saving the money, you're having to put less in over time because you're letting that compound and earnings continue to earn, et cetera. So that's a really good point, and it's probably for people who haven't had to save for college in the past, using a mortgage as an example would be something. If you, you know, start paying off a little extra sooner at the end of that mortgage loan, you're paying it off sooner because you weren't paying as much in interest, more was going toward principal. Same concept in saving for college. The more you start saving sooner, the more is getting invested and the earnings are saving money for you. We are ready for our first break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. So Kevin just demonstrated about time, and I think we're going to review that example one more time when we come back. And we welcome your calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. Thank you, Don. We have in the studio with us this evening Kevin Brogius. He is, Kevin, I know you're a CPA and a CFP practitioner, but I wanted to say where your firm was.
Yes, I have offices in Fogelsville, in Plymouth Meeting, and in Bridgewater, New Jersey.
And your firm is Wealth Management,
Inc. Wealth Management, Inc., yes.
Okay, and we're talking about education planning, and not just because he's a CPA and a CFP and an advisor, but because he's a father of four children, with one having already graduated and three in school right now. I think he's like our in-house expert. I have one who has already graduated as well. And when we talk about inflation and in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition and those averages, my daughter, when she started, I think her tuition was about $42,000 maybe, and I think by the time she finished, it was $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
She had a little bit of a scholarship, which helped, the academic scholarship, but that's a lot of money to shell out. My second daughter, while is not intellectual as my first daughter, ended up being the smarter daughter because she got an athletic scholarship, a D1 scholarship, and her whole college education is paid for. So that's wonderful. So, Kevin, before we took the break, I had asked about, how important it was to start saving when your child's young, and you gave a great example about if you started and saved over, X amount of dollars over this amount of years, it was like $7,000 a year, but if the person waited 5 years, they would have to save $11,000 a year to come up with a bucket of money.
Correct.
So your comment was, the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost you.
Correct, yeah.
So I just think that little tidbit alone should be enough to kind of spur people to like take some kind of action. So once someone decides, okay, it's time to start. So we've encouraged someone to do this. Oh, by the way, if you have questions, the phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. If you think you have a question, don't wait to call us. You can interrupt us at any time. And because sometimes the show starts to go a lot faster as we move through it. We start off a little slow, but then we start moving a lot faster. So if you have questions, 610-758-8810 or the website yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can call in with a live question or give your question to Judy Ann, and she will bring it into the studio and we can do it off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. So, Kevin, if over time someone decides, okay, I'm going to start saving earlier now because Kevin said it's a good idea and it's not going to cost me as much money. So what are some of the methods they can use to start saving some money?
There's a lot of different ones you could use. Some of the more popular, the one that is my favorite is the 529 plan. And I'll get into a little bit of the specifics of that in a minute. But there's also Coverdell accounts, custodial accounts. You can use savings bonds. Some clients use the Roth IRA for double duty, for retirement and or college. Municipal bonds have been used, and there's always gifts from relatives, which are always welcome.
The best kind of way to pay for college, gifts from relatives.
Where there's a will, there's a relative. Right?
Yeah. well, he's going to get me laughing. I'm not going to be able to finish the show. So let's talk about 529s because I too like 529s. I think they're a great tool. There's lots of different advantages to them. And the concepts we're talking about tonight folks, are general concepts. You have to make sure that it applies to your situation, so you need to work with your advisor. Kevin had mentioned Coverdell accounts. Coverdell, I don't see that often anymore. Years ago, before the 529, Coverdell might have made sense. You could get a deduction. You could use some of that money for secondary education. I think in my entire career, I've only seen like maybe one person with a Coverdell. So let's concentrate first on 529 accounts. Let's talk about what those are and get that conversation started.
Sure, Lori. The reason I mostly recommend 529 accounts to clients, there's a lot of different reasons. First of all, in Pennsylvania, taxpayers can deduct their contributions to the 529 account from their state income tax up to $14,000 a year per beneficiary per year per person. So a couple can contribute and deduct from their Pennsylvania taxes $28,000. That's a tax savings of $860 a year. That's considerable. Yeah, it's worthwhile doing. And with Pennsylvania, there is no requirement on how long the funds have to be in the account for the tax break. So you could essentially put funds in today, draw them out tomorrow, and still take the tax deduction from your Pennsylvania state income tax return. Also, earnings in the 529 that are withdrawn are excluded from income for tax purposes if used for higher education. You can freely change the beneficiary designations. So if you are saving for one child that decides eventually not to go to college, you can shift the beneficiary designation to another child or another relative that will be going to college. There's also no income restrictions on so there's, you know, you can make as much as you want and still contribute to the 529 account. For financial aid, the asset is counted as a parent's asset. This is for the federal financial aid application, FAFSA, and it's assessed at a maximum 5.6% expected family contribution. Okay. If it was the child's asset, it would be at 20%. So that is huge. The maximum investment, you know, there's a lot of plans now that allow over a total of $300,000 for many plans. And also, the money in the plans are protected from creditors.
I remember when 529 plans initially started, and I think the max was like, you know, it was like 260 maybe. It might not have even been as high as 260. So now you're saying it moved up to 300. And chances are, and we hope that a child's education may not cost that much, but recall in my example to Kevin, my daughter, her tuition averaged $50,000 a year. And that was for her bachelor's. These monies can also be used for graduate school as well, as long as it's a qualified education expense. And you need to understand what qualified education expenses are. The term can be very broad, and it has to be differentiated from the kind of qualified education expenses we use when we're looking at education credits we get on our tax return. So you always kind of have to put in a bucket what you're talking about. 529s might be one set of rules for qualified education expenses. When we're looking at education credits, it might be another thing. I want to piggyback on something that Kevin had mentioned about the amount that you can deduct. The $14,000, he said, per person, per beneficiary. So keep in mind that you get that deduction up to the amount of income you have. So if you have a husband who's making, you know, $240,000, he can do a $14,000 contribution to a 529 per per kid, per beneficiary, up to $240,000. So $14,000 per person up to $240,000. If the spouse doesn't make any money at all, zero, then they don't get that deduction. So you have to have income for the deduction, if that makes sense. But it has to be per person. So the husband, if you're trying to take a deduction for the wife, let me give you a very simple example. Husband makes $14,000. Wife makes $14,000. You have one child. You each can put in $14,000. That's a $28,000 deduction. You pay zero income tax. If the husband makes $24,000, the wife makes zero. I think I'm mixing up my numbers, then the deduction will only be based on the husband's income. We don't get to double dip on that. Pennsylvania has some weird tax laws. They let us file jointly out of convenience, but they really treat us as separate taxpayers. So we just want to make sure that you also understand you have to have income each to get that deduction. So I just wanted to make sure I explained that. So 529 accounts, lots of benefits for that. The expected family contribution, Kevin, you said it's not as much for the parents' asset.
Correct. Yeah. So for the 529, the reason that's attractive is because it's a 5.6%. That income only 5.6% goes to the expected family contribution. If it's a child's asset, like if you gave it to the child in the UGMA, UGMT.
UTMA, the Uniform Trust for Minors Act, or the Uniform Gift for Minors Act.
Got my alphabets mixed up here. That would count as 20%.
Yeah.
So it's much better to have these assets in a 529 account in the parent's name for the benefit of the child.
Okay. And folks, you need to kind of be aware of these things ahead of time, because if you're not aware of them until you go to fill out that FAFSA form, that's when you get caught and realize, shoot, I wish I would have known this before I did this. We're ready for our next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions live or off air, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert of Your Financial Choices. And I have in the studio with me this evening, Kevin Brosius. He's a CPA, CFP, and active member of the PICPA, who thankfully introduced us to Kevin to help us with our show on education and planning. Kevin is also the founder and president of Wealth Management, an independent fee-only financial planning firm. And registered investment advisory firm. So, Kevin, again, thanks for being here. We're talking about education planning, and we are taking questions. If you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We have a caller, Don, on line one. Hello, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi, Mary, how are you?
Good, thank you.
How can I help?
I have a question on the 529 plan in Pennsylvania. I have one currently, and I've been a bit disappointed with it because of the surcharges and the fees it assesses. So I listened to Kevin's comment about, you know, you can put the money in and take it right back out for tax purposes. But to me, it seems like if you put the money in, I have, like, Penn State credits, they hit you with a surcharge, you wouldn't take back the same money out. So it seems like a net loss, not a net gain.
Okay, Mary, we're talking about two different kinds of 529 plans. So, Kevin, do you want to comment on that, or do you?
Yeah, you're talking about the PA 529,
yes.
Mary?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The different plans sometimes have vastly different surcharges or expenses associated with them. In order to get the tax deduction for Pennsylvania, though, you can use any state's plan, okay? You don't have to use the Pennsylvania state's plan. Now, there are some benefits if you go to a state school by using the PA state plan. But to get the tax deduction, you can use any state's plan for that.
And, Mary, there's two different kinds of plans. One, the 529s, I think, first started in Michigan, if I remember right. And I think it's the kind of plan you're describing, which is the state plans offer, like, tuition equivalents. So
like a
you
credit.
Right.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you invest in it, and you're guaranteed some amount of tuition. But if what you put into it grows to more than what is needed, you don't benefit from that. And in fact, I think they did the surcharges when they realized the funds weren't growing enough to keep up with the cost of tuition. One of the things what I think Kevin and I are talking about are 529 plans that are independent and they're managed outside of the state plans. So you can work with a number of different custodians that you're making the investment decisions, not the state. And you're making the investment decisions that you can participate in the windfall if the investments do well, or, you know, you take the hit and lose money if the investments go down. Whereas the state plan you're talking about, you're actually sharing in some kind of guaranteed tuition credits.
Yeah, so. And it's, I mean, it's gone up in value, but they hit you with so many surcharges. It's just not as
attractive
as it was. I started it, you know, 17 years ago.
One of the things I see some folks do, Mary, is actually do a little bit of both. So they get a little bit of the guaranteed plans or, you know, what used to be guaranteed, and then they adjusted it. But, you know, they look for those mm-hmm. tuition credit plans through the state. And I'm sorry, my mind just isn't grasping the name of that PA plan is how Kevin called it, versus one of these custodial plans that mm-hmm. you can get into separate.
So that idea of putting it in and taking right back out is with these other custodial plan.
Yeah, and you can have, Mary, you can have more than one 529 plan.
Right.
So if you wanted to, you know, work that strategy, you could work that exact strategy with another 529 if you'd like.
And okay. And the tax rate in Pennsylvania is 3.07%. So for folks who even say, you know, I'm too risk averse, I don't want to put money into one of these plans, the plans all have cash as an option. So even if you put money into a 529 plan in cash because you're so risk averse, you would still be saving 3.07% of Pennsylvania income tax if you have other income. It's about one of the only deductions we get on our Pennsylvania returns.
Right. Yeah, I have gotten that. Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
You bet.
That was good that she brought up the point about the estate plans because I kind of, they're not usually on my radar, frankly, especially when I know that Pennsylvania had its little hiccups. So they're not on my radar.
Yeah, and I do applaud her for starting 17 years ago.
They were probably fairly new
right,
then.
So, and she's got the benefit of that compounding interest every year.
I want to mention something, too, that Kevin had referred to, the expected family contribution. That's a very important number when you're looking at financial aid. And again, I was mentioning websites throughout the show tonight, and I've mentioned this one before. It's fafsa.ed.gov. That's fafsa.ed.gov. If you go on there, there's other links to other websites like studentaid.gov. And you can find calculators now on that website. In the old days, I used to go to a website that was finaid.org, and the calculators I used there because I didn't see any on the FAFSA website. But now those calculators are old, and we have current up-to-date calculators on the FAFSA website. So it's kind of nice to go through those. And that calculator helps a family know what their expected family contribution might be based on their income and their assets. Because when you go to fill out that FAFSA form in January or whenever you go to fill it out, if you're going to school at some other time of the year, you're going to have lots of financial information ready. But it's as of that day, of that picture, you know, what you have in your accounts that day. So it's really important to know ahead of time how you can plan to manipulate some of that. So, Kevin, we also talked about grandparents wanting to help with education costs. What are their options if they want to help kids? We already said, who can set up a 529?
Yep.
Anybody.
Grandparents definitely can. First, though, grandparents usually don't qualify for any of the tax credits that we'll talk about a little bit later, okay? Because the child is not a dependent of the grandparent. You have to be dependent to qualify for the tax, but we'll get into that a little bit later. However, they can set up a 529 account for the benefit of the grandchild. And when they contribute to this, they can also receive a PA state income tax deduction for their contributions. Also, the 529 account is excluded from the PA inheritance tax. Now, if a grandparent wanted to make a significant contribution towards the child's education, they can give the tuition directly to the college and would allow them to avoid potential gift taxes. But since this may also impact the child's financial aid, you have to coordinate this. The gifts shouldn't be made until the child is finished applying for his or her financial aid.
Okay. So grandparents, you can make gifts directly to the educational institution, and then you avoid gift limitations. We don't see gift tax as much as we did in the past with the higher federal estate tax exemption and the unified gift exemption. So gift tax may not be as much of an issue, but filing a gift tax return could kick in if you give more than $14,000 to any individual, even if you're putting it into a 529. So if you make the contribution or the gift directly to the educational institution, it does not come into play for your gifting, your annual gifting exclusion. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And again, grandparents get a credit on their tax return if they're putting on their Pennsylvania tax return if they're putting money in a 529 as well. So keep that in mind. We are at our next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Love the calls. Thank you, Mary, for calling earlier. If you have questions, please call in. Kevin and I are here. 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. We're talking about education planning this evening. And we have in the studio with us Kevin Brogius. He is a CPA and a CFP practitioner. He is a member of the PICPA, which is how he was introduced to us. Thank you very much, Kathleen Miller, down in Philadelphia. And he is the founder and president of Wealth Management, Inc., an independent fee-only financial planning and registered investment advisory firm. He's also the father of four children, one having already graduated, three in college right now. I'm not sure why Kevin's not out working right now. Kevin, get back to work. You got to pay for these kids' college.
I'm not getting paid for this?
Yeah, no. It's no. All volunteer here. We have lots of stories that we could tell. And the whole point tonight is talking about education planning, talking about being ready for it, and how much better off you'll be by doing a little pre-planning and getting ready for this. Kevin demonstrated at the beginning of the show, simply saving earlier is going to save you a lot of money and not cost you as much, because then you're letting compounding and interest and things like that work for you. And usually we have a nice long time horizon with our kids. If we start at like when they're first born, you know, we have like a good 18 years to invest, like our caller Mary, who had invested 17 years ago. Congrats to her. So we're talking about some of the strategies: using a 529, getting a deduction on your Pennsylvania income tax return. Let's talk really quick, Kevin, since we're financial planners as well. Quite often we'll get the question, should we pay for our kids' college education so the poor things don't have to take out loans? Should we take money out of our retirement accounts, or should we use money that we would otherwise be putting in our retirement? What should we do? Where is it more important to save?
My opinion, Lori, is overwhelmingly and without question, saving for retirement is more important. I think you would probably agree with me.
I would agree, but it's not always works in practice.
Exactly,
but we do agree.
Much too often I see a prospective client, and this happens a lot, that has fully funded their child or children's education, but aren't sure when or how they can retire. Okay? You know, and I tell them, remember, you can always get a loan to get a college education. You can't get a loan to retire.
In fact, it's very difficult to even get a loan once you're retired.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
People who think, oh, I'm going to go get a loan on my house because I don't have any money now, and they don't qualify because they don't have any income. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So, you know, first thing I do is I try to dissuade them from taking any loans or withdrawals from their retirement accounts to fund the child's education, okay? So in addition to paying potentially first of all, it would be fully taxable in most cases. Secondly, there would be a 10% penalty in most cases. Third, the income would probably count as income when filling out the FAFSA form.
Right.
Okay, so you lose there also. So you know, you lose kind of all the way around with doing that strategy. You know, once I had to tell a client that was drawing down their retirement to fund the child's education that I hope the child gets a good job, buys a big house, because you'll be living there.
Well, you know, I also had a client once who every year, it was like 1 year, and then the second year I caught on to this. He was taking distributions out of his 401k, which did not qualify for an exception to the 10% penalty. And the 10% penalty Kevin and I are talking about is that early withdrawal penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. There's some exceptions to it, and there's a little tiny, you know, education exception on the IRAs, but not on 401ks. So this gentleman was practically maxing out his 401k. Okay, so putting money in his 401k and not having it on page one of his return, and then withdrawing it from his 401k, then putting it back on page one of his return, and then getting a 10% penalty on it. It was epiphany to him when I said to him, just stop taking the money out of your 401k. If you're intent on using your retirement money, which I also dissuaded him from doing, but he was intent on paying for his kids' college education because he said no one paid for his. So I said, okay, then, just stop putting the money in your 401k. At least you can avoid the 10% penalty. So what happened is when he stopped the 401k contributions, he had more cash flow. So he had the cash flow, but it was still net of tax, but he at least avoided the 10% penalty. So it's kind of crazy what people end up doing to help their kids pay for college. And, you know, I tell everyone, I had to pay my own way. I had to work lots and lots and lots, and I did it, and I managed, and you know, we got through it. So we want folks to avoid a 10% penalty on early withdrawal out of their retirement accounts. So find other ways to pay for college. What are some other ways that kids can pay for college? Or, you know, we talked about filling out the FAFSA form. So I guess they can, the FAFSA form is the free application for financial student aid that is through the government loans for financial aid. But it's not just for government loans. It could also be for grants or scholarships, work study, things like that. And in fact, I wanted to kind of give a little bit of a definition around when we do the FAFSA. Let me see if I can find that. It said the federal student aid from federal government includes grants, which are free money that doesn't have to be repaid, except in some cases when you withdraw from school. So I think back in the day, everyone thought when they filled out the FAFSA for financial aid, I think everyone thought it was free money. Like everybody, oh yeah, financial aid, free money. You know, long gone are those days. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I'm not sure if grants are even given anymore. No, I think they probably are. But so grants are free money, but quite often the majority of financial aid folks are loans. There's also work study. So you may qualify for work study. Typically that's needs based. And that's money that the student is earning to help pay for their education when they're in school. But then loans, money you borrow for school, which you must repay with interest. So loans that folks can get for financial aid, Kevin, we have what we call subsidized loan and unsubsidized loans. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. Well, the difference is interest does not accrue on subsidized loans during periods of deferment, while it does accrue on non-subsidized loans. And subsidized loans have slightly better terms also for the students. There's needs-based loans, which would be the federal Perkins loans, and that's awarded by colleges to students with the highest need. That also carries a low interest rate. And the other need-based loan would be the federal direct subsidized loans. They have a borrowing limit that increases for each year of school you complete. There's also non-need-based loans, the federal direct unsubsidized loan. It allows you to add the interest fees to the amount you borrowed until after graduation, but this means you'll actually end up owing more money. And there's also the federal Parent Plus loans, which I'm sure a lot of parents are familiar with, and that allows parents to borrow the total cost of college minus any financial aid received.
Oh, okay. So the subsidized loans, the interest does not accrue during the period of school. That's the subsidized loans. That's more need-based. And then we have unsubsidized loans where the financial need is not required, but interest accrues. People can probably pay that interest over the years if they want. I know my daughter, we made her take out a $3,000 loan. That poor kid came out of college with a $3,000 loan with that education.
It's good to have skin in the game.
Yeah, we really made her do that. Mm-hmm. So we actually did pay the interest, though, every year for mm-hmm. her so that she would come out with that $3,000
loan.
Correct.
Yeah, you can pay the interest as you're, instead of accruing it.
Okay.
Yes.
So lots of different loan options for folks. And as we mentioned, too, work study could be part of that plan. And again, I think people have said in the past work study might be financial need based as well. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. We are talking about education planning. We are talking about saving for your retirement first and then saving for your children's college education. But as Kevin mentioned at the beginning of the show, the sooner you start, the earlier you start, the less you have to save. So maybe you can do a little bit of both. Or you can encourage your family and friends when it's time for birthdays and gifts to perhaps make contributions to a 529 account that you yourself may have set up. It doesn't mean when you set up a 529 account that you're the only one who can make a deposit into it. Other people can make a deposit into the 529 account as well. You just kind of have to tell them how to do it or, you know, who to write the check to. And that 529 accounts, when we are looking at the expected family contribution, when we're filling out that financial aid application, the FAFSA form, the 529 accounts don't count as much as if the money was in the child's assets. We also talked about even if you're someone who's risk averse and, you know, insist on keeping everything in cash, even making a contribution to a 529 and keeping it in cash, if you're a Pennsylvania resident, could still get you a deduction on your Pennsylvania return. So lots of different things to talk about. We talked about FAFSA forms, filling out the FAFSA. We've talked about financial aid and applying for financial aid, getting more information from the website fafsa.ed.gov. There's lots of publications there, calculators there, and descriptions of what the expected family contribution is. Other websites that are available, studentaid.ed.gov. And there's also a website available that has a lot of information about 529 accounts and being able to compare 529 accounts, and that's called savingforcollege.com, savingforcollege.com. So you can compare some of the 529 plans that are out there. You want to look at the cost of the plan. You want to look at the investment options in a plan. Are there target date investment options? You know, are you going to get a deduction in whatever state you happen to live in or not? If you're in Pennsylvania, as Kevin mentioned earlier, you can have a plan anywhere in the country and get a deduction. So don't miss out on that. If you are someone who has a 529 plan and you weren't aware of this deduction that you get on your Pennsylvania income tax return, you need to start paying attention, look that up, and make sure that you get to to take that deduction. When we come back, we're going to talk about education credits that are available to you, and that's a little payback to those folks who qualify for them. Not everybody qualifies for them, so we're going to talk a little bit about what those education credits are, who they apply to, and at least getting a little bit back in your pocket for all that education costs that you have. The phone number again this evening, and we still have plenty of time for questions. Phone number 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm in the studio this evening with Kevin Bergius. He's a CPA and CFP, and here representing the PICPA as a member there, as I am as well. And Kevin is a founder and president of Wealth Management, Inc. Kevin, you had mentioned something earlier, and you just reminded me, and I apologize, because when you said it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right, we should talk about that. Kevin had mentioned, when we were talking about different ways to pay for college cost, we talked about using a 529 plan, and he mentioned a Roth IRA. Now, remember we told you earlier, we do want to make sure you're still saving money for your retirement. So let's talk about what we mean when we say maybe using some Roth IRA money for education planning and that double duty benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Roth is a good way, Lori, to add some flexibility potentially into your college savings plan and a strategy that I've employed with clients in the past. As you know, Roth contributions can be withdrawn at any time, tax-free and penalty-free. Not the earnings, just the contributions, okay? So it's a little bit different than, you know, your regular IRAs where, you know, anything that goes in, if you take it out early, there's a 10% penalty unless some exception applies, okay? So, you know, a Roth can be good if the client doesn't know how much they'll need for college or how long they'll be working, okay? So a parent can take a distribution from a Roth which isn't counted as income or towards the expected family contribution, and then use those funds to pay for college. So the Roth can really, you know, double as a retirement account or a college savings vehicle. So when the child gets ready for college, the question then becomes, do we have enough funds for retirement? Mm-hmm. And can we then transfer some of those, that excess funds, over to fund the college savings?
I think it's brilliant. I've mentioned that to clients as well for their emergency fund planning as well. Sometimes people need an emergency fund and maybe they're not saving anywhere else. A Roth IRA is a great vehicle to start saving for that. And back to a great point that Kevin mentioned at the beginning of the show again, the sooner you start saving, the better, because there's a limit on how much we can put into a Roth IRA each year. And that's if you're within a certain income, limitation. So if you're starting young, chances are your income isn't so high yet that it precludes you from putting money into a Roth. So, and it's just a great vehicle, like all the way around. It could be used as an emergency fund before you have kids and still be for your retirement. Then as you all of a sudden have a family and then your kids start going to college, again, it could be that little extra benefit you need to kind of help pad some of those costs you have. That it's great. Double duty. It could be triple duty because it could also be your emergency fund too. Roth IRAs, They're really awesome. And again, you have to be aware of the income limitations, and you have to have earnings to put money into a Roth IRA. But when you put money into a Roth IRA, because you're putting in after-tax money, those original contributions can always come out with no tax consequence. It's really brilliant. So that's great, Kevin. Thanks for reminding me about that. Now, since we're talking about tax returns and Roth IRAs and income limitations, we also know there's some tax credits out there for education when we're spending money on education. What are some of those education? Wait, Kevin, first let me say the phone number again, because we do have a little time. Phone number is 610-758-8810. You can just call in your question, give it to Judy Ann, and she can bring it in to me, or you can come with us live on air, 610-758-8810. So, Kevin, what kind of tax credits do we have out there for those folks spending on education?
Yeah, I think the big one is the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Mm-hmm. And this is where parents can claim a tax credit up to $2,500 for qualifying college expenses. There is an income limitation on this one, though. It's $160,000 for joint filers and $80,000 for those filing single. But it does apply to the first 4 years of college now. So how this works is the first $2,000 is at 100%, and the next $2,000 would be at 25%. Okay, and that's how they get to the $2,500. Now, you cannot use the American Opportunity Tax Credit for the same expenses you use the 529 withdrawals to pay for. So there's no double dipping allowed. So what I advise clients to do is pay the first $4,000 in tuition fees with savings or from their regular checking to get the tax credit, and then use the 529 funds for the rest of the college expense.
Okay, that's a good point. That is a huge, huge point. So all of you people have been so excited over the 529 plan accounts that we've been talking about. We want you to just pull back just a little tiny bit, that when it comes time to send those kids to college and you start writing those checks for tuition, as long as the American Opportunity Tax Credit is available, and it's available still in 2013, so this is really for those folks who are writing those checks right now or taking money out of your 529s right now, to be eligible for that huge credit, if your income's under $160,000, there's a phase out for between $160,000 and $180,000. If you're over $180,000 for married filing joint, you don't get it. But under that amount, there's a phase out, or you're totally entitled to the $2,500. If you have qualified education expenses and you've paid for them. Again, Kevin said you can't double dip. So we can't put money in the 529 and take $20,000 out of the 529 and pay $20,000 of tuition, because the government's already given us that break on the 529. So they're not going to let us now take that same money and use it for the American Opportunity Credit. So in my example of $20,000 of tuition and Kevin's example of paying tuition out of pocket, you'd want to pay, what was it, Kevin, $4,000? $4,000 out of pocket would give you, if you otherwise qualify, a $2,500 tax credit. $2,500 free.
Right, right.
$2,500, that's a pretty good return on your money. And then the balance, you'd use the 529 money, right?
Yes.
Now, the American Opportunity Credit was for the first 4 years of college, so that's your bachelor's degree. Do we have some other education credits or anything else you want to add about the American Opportunity Credit?
Yeah, if you want to continue your education into grad school, the Lifetime Learning Credit would help you do that. There's also a tuition and fees reduction, okay? And again, that's if you don't qualify for the American Opportunity Tax Credit.
Right, and the tuition and fees deduction, I guess that would be, it doesn't
necessarily. That's up to $4,000, and that also has income limits associated with it.
Okay. But it doesn't have to be necessarily then the 4 years of college like the American Opportunity Credit is.
Correct.
So, folks, you really need to kind of get your arms around some of this planning and be careful about how you ended up doing it. We had mentioned earlier in the show, too, there's some things people can do with savings bonds, but I don't really see anyone doing that.
I don't see that much either, Lori. Now, the deal with savings bonds is savings bonds that were issued after, excuse me, this would be 1989, and they have to be double E bonds. They can be redeemed tax-free for college expenses. Okay, so some people out there might have savings bonds that were given to their children as gifts, you know, at their birth or whatever. So you can use those also for college expenses. That's limited to $10,000 a year, okay? Tuition and fees qualify, but no other expenses, okay? So not books or supplies, anything like that. So it's a little more restrictive than the 529 accounts would be. And there's also an income exclusion on that, which is $142,000 for married couples and $90,000 for singles. I've also seen people use municipal bonds to fund education, sometimes with zero coupon municipal bonds where you know, you don't get any income but buy the bond at a discount to par, and then you would get the par value when the bond matures, right in time for college. Interest would be tax-free, but the problem with that is the risk of investing in an individual security, a municipal bond.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a little risk there. And then we also talked about monetary gifts from relatives, which are always welcome.
Right. So education planning. Let me mention some of these websites again. FAFSA.ed.gov. I just want to make sure that folks don't go to, there is a website, I think it's called FAFSA.com, that is not the government website. So be careful. FAFSA.ed.gov, studentaid.ed.gov. And then lots of resources, information, educational tools, calculators, all kinds of stuff there. It's great. And there is this booklet that I've been referencing this evening. I think it was called Your Federal Student Loans. Lots of information there. In fact, for folks who have student loans, quite often we get calls about where clients have lots of student loans and how do they get rid of them and how do they pay them down. There are opportunities to consolidate loans, and that's consolidating loans that were through these federal programs. And you may or may not get better interest rates. You really have to kind of sit back and analyze that. Do you get calls from people asking about, you know, what do I do with these student loans?
Yeah, sometimes I do. And actually, there are planners now that that specialize just in the whole college funding, student loans, and aggregation of those loans. So, you know, if I have referred clients out to these people if they need more help, mm-hmm. you know, we want a deeper dive on some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Some folks nowadays, too, encourage their children to go to community colleges. That's one way to cut back on expenses. And we have some great community colleges in our
That's a great idea.
In our community. Yeah. Some kids stay at home.
Mm-hmm. Save $50,000.
Yeah.
Right?
And some parents don't want the kids to stay home. And we all know it's a really good idea for kids to kind of get away. But if you're going to save chunks of change like that, it might make sense for kids to stay home.
If you go to the community college, you can actually go to the college that you would eventually like to graduate from first. Ask them what credits they would accept from the community college, because they won't accept everything.
Okay.
Then you could take those classes and have them transferred in.
Great. Great concept there. And AP courses. Some of the kids in high school take these advanced placement courses, and they take exams, and they, you know, pay like $30 or $50 or something for the AP course and test. It's not just taking the course. They actually have to take a test, and then they can get credits for school. My daughter paid the same amount of money no matter how many classes she took when she went to St. Joe's. But the AP courses gave her credits that she actually then took like four classes instead of five. So it gave her a little breathing room. Mm-hmm. In the years that she needed it. Kevin, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't cover that you thought that we should like throw out there or give some additional information to folks?
Well, what I tell people, and I think you mentioned this before, Lori, is complete the FAFSA application. You know, a lot of times clients will come in and say, well, I'm making too much money, I'm not going to do that. But the FAFSA is used for not only for the federal aid, but colleges use that to give grants, to give their aid, you know, which is more parochial than that.
Academic scholarships.
So, yes, exactly. So I encourage everybody, although it's a pain, I understand that, go do the exercise and fill out the FAFSA form.
I think that this year I learned that you can actually upload your tax return automatically. In the past, we used to have to fill out the income tax information. Mm-hmm. I think that it can actually go out and get that income tax information, which is a little scary. But I think it could be done. Kevin, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Kevin, can you give your information one more time and your phone number?
Yeah, sure. Again, I have an office in Fogelsville, Plymouth Meeting, and Bridgewater, New Jersey. The name of my firm is Wealth Management. My website is wealthmanagement1.com, and you can reach me at 484-264-6270. And thank you very much, Valeria. I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate you being here. Thanks, folks. We do try to give you all this financial information each week. Next week, I'm talking about healthcare, some general concepts, and the beginning of the Affordable Health Care Act. Hopefully, I'll have some information to share with you. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, Don, for being here this evening. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.